Hello? Hello?
Hello.
Okay. We have Jewel Jones and Noel Patrick Brady.
That's correct.
Okay. And you are the consul for Montreal, consul of Jamaica for
I am
Montreal.
the consul of Jamaica for Montreal, Quebec.
Okay. Now, would you let the ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters, hear the reason that you are based there?
My name is Noel Patrick Brady. I'm the consul for Jamaica in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. And I'm here for the point of helping Jamaicans and Canadians to do business between Canada and Jamaica, whether they're importing or exporting on either side of the ocean. And to the point that we build up areas that are tax-free areas in Jamaica that Canadians or Americans have the privilege of bringing in goods into Jamaica tax-free, manufacturing the goods, and then exporting the goods back to the USA or Canada or Europe or the Far East. We also work a lot with the various municipalities and cities to assist in forms of immigration between the countries of Canada and Jamaica, taking care of many of the ministers who may be visiting Montreal on political business to set up in advance various ministers of the government, provincial or federal. Like in the USA, you have the federal and the state. In Canada, we have the federal and the provincial and the municipal. And basically the same principle as the states. So we are here, and I'm here, to be the person in between the government of Jamaica and the prop and Quebec or Canada to do business most of all, and also for the nationals in Canada.
I know Miss Jones was talking about a benefit dinner. Would you talk a little bit about the dinner that happened just recently?
I would like first of all to thank WHRW and Mr. Rathchild Jones of having me on the show here. And I'll talk about the dinner we had last night. We had our annual independence dinner for Jamaicans in Montreal. As we all know, Jamaica is enjoying its 42nd year of independence in Jamaica. And we have an annual celebration for that. And the proceeds of that function last night goes to a boys' school in Kingston that takes care of orphans that are parents might have died in accidents, or they've just given the children for one reason or another. And these are orphan children that people in Kingston, Jamaica, do volunteer work to take care of these children, and the people are not paid, but they are sponsored sometimes by corporations or individuals. And the proceeds of the function last night shall be going to this orphan school in Kingston, Jamaica, that I think and we think that they need a lot of help. And I wish if I could promote on a larger scale to build a bigger school, a better school, and more facilities for the youth of the orphan boys that could become tomorrow leaders of the world.
That is a very good thing indeed. We need to really know the potential of our youth and help them as in any way we can, and especially the ones that don't have the mothers and fathers and are unfortunate enough to wind up in the home. And I know there's a home there called Alpha School for Boys that
That is correct.
very famous for the Jamaican musicians that have come out. And I want to know ask some questions. I got a question that some Jamaican friends have asked me, and they say they're here, and a lot of them are professionals, And I often have wondered, how come, you know, when you hear some of the things that happened with Jamaica, how come they don't go back and invest in Jamaica? And that's the question that I asked them, and they asked me, what would be an incentive for them to come home? Can you expound on that?
Definitely, Russ. I shall expound it because it's one of my pet subjects, in that Jamaica as a country has about 2.8 to 3 million population on the island, and about the 2.5 million Jamaicans off the island in North America and Europe. There are many Jamaicans at the moment who have left Jamaica maybe 20, 30, 40 years ago and more, went to London, England, Birmingham, and other parts of England, bought homes in the early days, £2,000. They have since then sold their homes, and they returned back to Jamaica with their pension and hard currency earnings. And today, in Jamaica, this is the third highest income for the island of Jamaica, are people who are sending back money to Jamaica from the proceeds of their success. And they have built beautiful homes in places like Mandeville, which is located in the center of the island. It's an inland town where the bauxite industry has done a great job for blue-collar jobs and white-collar jobs in Mandeville. So there are many Jamaicans in North America who have been sending back funds in investments, in the banking field, in the housing field, and that has been a tremendous help for the island of Jamaica. And there might be a few to whom you might have discussed with who have not yet seen the benefits of doing so, but there is a tremendous amount of income that goes back to Jamaica on a monthly basis from Jamaicans who have retired, and this hard currency is going back from Europe and from North America on a monthly basis, and that has helped the hard currency in Jamaica and helped also the importation and exportation trade balance tremendously. So it has been a great success, and that's why we promote, for example, many nurses coming out of Jamaica into North America. Now, I personally have promoted to the government from the Prime Minister down to train more and more nurses, lab technicians, anything that the USA and Canada has a great demand for, to supply that demand. Do not create the demand. Fill the demand that exists today. So I say, Russ, it has been very good in that direction and will be better.
All right, what is the economy of Jamaica based on, in order of importance, would you say?
Tourism is one of the top, and then we have industries like the bauxite industry. The raw material in Jamaica from Alcan of Canada is one company, and you had Kaiser, you had Reynolds, you had Alpart from the USA, whereby they would have bought large parts of land or small land in given areas all over the island, and they export, they excavate the surface of it, the topsoil we call it, and then within 2 feet to 5 feet, they have the raw ore that they excavate and they put on the tracks to the ocean where the ships are there docked, and they are taken in to Quebec and to Canada and to USA to be refined into bauxite. That is a big earning, to the point that Jamaica owns one half of the aluminum company called Alcan of Canada. The government owns one half, and they have joint ventures in other things down there. So the tourism is quite helpful. The industrial sector, that's what we are promoting more and more. Agriculture is very effective for the point of a mass labor of laborers and people work in the agricultural sector. And just this week, I saw and read where the agricultural sector of Jamaica has had a very successful year this year, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And up and above that, it's people who are invested in the country and in manufacturers on what they call the free zone here, as I said before, tax free in, tax free out. But overall, we look forward for countries like America and Canada to become more players in the country. We are so near to the USA, and we speak English, the country speaks English, and two other languages, but English is the main language of Jamaica. And to the Americans, they are very welcome, as always was. And the tourism this year, Ralph, has improved a lot, based on the fact that, unfortunately, not because of the unfortunate situation of Europe and the Middle East, but that has attracted a lot of Americans into Jamaica this year. In fact, this year, it was a bumper year for Jamaican tourism. The hotels are filled, and this coming winter, it's going to be even better. Unfortunately, we should not ride on the tail of others, but that is what is happening also, that because of the uncertainty in Europe and the uncertainty in the Middle East, and what is happening, as we all know, a lot of Americans have shied away, and now they see the Caribbean islands, and Jamaica is the gem of them all, as the place to be and the place to go. Then many Americans have been to Jamaica 8 times in a year because they just love it.
Well, I've only been there 5 times, but I didn't go in 1 year.
But Ralph, I suggest to you to go there every 3 months.
Hey,
and
listen.
I have the tapis rouge, I have red carpet for you.
And I have to correct you, sir. I think Barbados is a gem.
Tell us this.
I stand be corrected.
Tell her.
Jones, you're right.
Tell him, Miss Jones, because we know that Barbados is the number one country, English-speaking country in the Caribbean for literacy.
That is correct. In fact, I remember my high school teacher in Jamaica was from Barbados.
Okay.
So that is correct.
Okay, now here's a question I got for you. To what degree do the Jamaican people control their own economy? Because you're telling me about all these other places like Europe and America. And so to what degree do the Jamaican people control their own economy?
Well, I would say I'll segregate them into Jamaicans who are of a third and fourth generation of Europeans, for example. Europeans who have been to Jamaica maybe 50 years ago, and their children and grandchildren are now in place and seen as Jamaicans.
Mm-hmm.
And they have been extremely successful in the field of business, whether it's manufacturing and exporting, whether it's clothing, whether it's all different types of manufacturing that they do on the island, and whether it is in the field of the business of tourism or construction.
Mm-hmm.
And the local Jamaicans who are there, they themselves have evolved a lot. I mean, you'll have many years ago where you'd have Europeans who would go to Miami or South America and buy goods and services and would bring it back to Jamaica for sale. Then you'll find black Jamaicans are now doing that, and the children are being very successful. And I'm stressing very much that type of operation brings me back to the point that education. These youth now, they were at the bottom, for example, but because they're educated, they've jumped from the bottom with a double doctorate and the MBAs and engineers to the top of the roll. So even though their parents were what they call small shoppers in the US or in Panama or in South America, the children now would have attended universities in the States, whether it be Harvard or Howard or all the universities throughout the States, and would have been qualified with American degrees and American knowledge and American know-how that they can compete at the top level in one generation. And I'm very proud of that, Russ.
Okay, but is that a small amount, or is that I know it's different sectors you're talking about of the people, but is that a small amount? Because I'm trying to get to do the masses of the people really.
Okay, I reply to you. The masses of people today, we have 72% are literate.
Okay.
72% are literate. 81% of the population of Jamaica are under age 30, 30. And the youth today are striving for education. The government has put in hundreds of more high schools in the island, and they've put in a lot of trade schools, which have helped tremendously. And they have been promoting scholarships to the University of the West Indies in Jamaica and in Barbados. There are different schools in Trinidad. There's the University of West Indies is located in Jamaica. There are many schools all in various islands. And we have the curriculum, which also helps a lot in the trade between the islands, which never happened 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So the trade and the locals have been benefited tremendously. But I must say, Jamaica still has a huge amount of potential for the future. It's still not developed. So the Americans who are listening, I would invite them to go to Jamaica, call for information, and they can make a wealth of business down there with huge profits, and that's what it's all about.
May I cut in and ask a question?
Sure.
In terms of literacy, what is the average mark for Jamaicans in high school? To say, well, what is the passing mark for Jamaicans in high school?
The passing mark, I am not sure on this question, mm-hmm. but it was 165.
65, okay.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But now, I'm not sure about that.
The general passing mark.
Right.
65, yeah. Are there Jamaicans who have no real stake in the Jamaican economy, and how large a group are they?
I would say there is a large group of Jamaicans who do not have any substantial stake, and I use the word substantial underlined. But because of democracy that has been exercised in Jamaica for the past many years, every Jamaican, whether he owns a quarter acre of land or a 1 acre of land or 10 acres of land, he is a very entrepreneurial type of a person. And most Jamaicans, both locally in Jamaica and in North America, they strive for independence of themselves and to go in some small type of business wherever they may be, irrespective of the adverse circumstances sometimes that prevail. But they are the type that will innovate themselves from one height to another height.
Mm-hmm.
So getting back to your question, in Jamaica, there's a large amount who do not have substantial holdings, but they do have holdings. And again, I repeat, with the children being educated, that small holding becomes larger holdings, be it in Jamaica or out of Jamaica.
Mm-hmm. Now,
they do aspire for that achievement, especially with the internet today, and especially with the communication of the television and radio, and the exposure of knowledge and know-how. I mean, there are television stations in the States and throughout today that shows them how to do the business, shows them how to manufacture, shows them how to make connections, show them how to go on the internet, show them what to do, what not to do, and they are doing just that.
And it shows them how to be other than Jamaican, actually.
You know? That is correct.
Well, let me ask you this question. Now, what degree do non-Jamaicans control the Jamaican economy, and who has that control?
I would say that in Jamaica, there are a certain amount of non-Jamaicans, much, much less than the past. For example, like the large bauxite companies, they are non-Jamaicans.
Okay.
It is Kaiser or Reynolds or Alpart that has been down there for many years,
mm-hmm.
or Alken in Canada. They are non-Jamaicans, and they do control a substantial amount of the exportation of this raw stuff and in the industrial field. Outside of that, the sugar industry is controlled by Jamaicans today. It was once controlled by the English in England, and there's a company called Tate and Lyle, T-A-T-E-L-L-Y-L-E,
mm-hmm.
and they were the control factors. But that has been completely phased out to local Jamaican farmers, and they have corporations and cooperatives that they get together and they organize themselves, that they send their sugar cane to the factories where it is ground into sugar and exported in quotas. So a large sector of what was foreign is now local, and the locals are working very hard to bring even partners. It's part of my mandate here to get partners for joint ventures that Mr. Rothschild Jones will become a partner of the Jamaican that I'll introduce him to in Jamaica, depending on what he would like to do in business. It could be radio, it could be many other things. And that I'll be happy to introduce him to a partner. We have many partners who have been to my office, many Canadians I should say, been in that office seeking a partner that he'd like to go into Jamaica to do a manufacturing type of a product, and he would like a local partner who has an idea of that product and to for him to get into Jamaica through this person, work together in joint ventures and proceed accordingly. And that works out very, very well, because joint ventures can be very advantageous for both sides, and especially one person knows a bit more of the exportation and marketing field, while the other person knows a lot more about the manufacturing side in Jamaica. So together they form a great team. It's like two horses pulling together for the success and good of all.
Now, here's another question I'm going to ask you. Did you see that documentary, Life in Debt?
A short part of it, not the total.
Okay, now here's my question about that. Now, you don't really have to be that educated to figure out that if the government owes a lot of money, then somebody can come in there and say, you got to sell what I tell you to sell. And I'm saying that to you because the part that I saw, I remember vividly, are the farmers who can't sell their crop, and the people are buying American goods. To me, how can that benefit the people when you get into this debt with the IMF? How can you benefit? Can you expound on that one?
Yes, I can. See, free trade between, an example is free trade between Canada, the USA, and Mexico. As a Canadian myself, living in Canada, Canada has benefited over 40% more exportation of goods and services to the States than vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been extremely beneficial to Canada. But at the same time, America and Canada, they have the difference at times with the lumber at the moment, or the cattle at the moment, but you have to buy from each other free trade. Free trade then brought into Jamaica, where they had to open up now to buy goods and services from Canada and from the USA with free trade.
Mm-hmm.
It puts the farmers and many of the manufacturers in Jamaica at a humongous disadvantage.
Mm-hmm.
Because the farmers in Canada and the States are subsidized by the government. The farmers in Jamaica are not subsidized by the government. So when the farmers in America and the States, the subsidized farmers, they can dump 1 million chickens, for example, in Jamaica or wherever, and at a reduced price because they're subsidized. Now the Jamaican farmer who has his chickens maybe, let's say, 100,000, 10,000 per month or per week, he is not subsidized and he cannot compete.
Mm-hmm.
So with the free trade, it is good to have free trade, but very disadvantageous for the countries that agriculture is not subsidized. Like in France and Europe, our love agriculture is subsidized. The third world countries, unfortunately, are not in a position financially to subsidize their farmers. And that is a humongous disadvantage to Jamaica.
It's a catch-22 kind of thing. You look at it and you say, man, this is good, but then this is bad, but this is
exactly
is my country, and I'm watching the farmer. I mean, you know, when I was in Jamaica, everybody said, respect due to the farmer. You know, anywhere I went in the country, because I always go to country, and the farmer gets much respect because he's the one to grow the crops. But if he can't make a living, what's going to happen? What's going to happen to the people there?
You see, you are the business person in Jamaica, for example, and with free trade, you can buy the dumping of these chickens or other goods from the States for one-third the price.
Okay.
And you are a hoteler, and you're buying maybe 10,000 chickens per week, as the case might be. You are looking at your directors, especially a public corporation, your directors are looking at the bottom line. And you, the director, is not showing the bottom line, then you're fired. So he is going to buy chickens that are healthy, good, at the best price, and wherever they're coming from.
But bottom line make people suffer.
That is correct. You are correct.
Is that right,
bottom
though?
Bottom line does make people suffer.
Is that right?
That's why, unfortunately, we have to evolve and keep on suffering until we find other ways and means of diversifying or doing other things to be competitive.
And education. Education is key.
Education.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's a serious matter with agriculture being subsidized in Canada here and the States and Europe. And many times in Canada, states have arguments about the fact that one is subsidizing more than the other.
Mm, that's right.
And there are many arguments among the first world countries that they're subsidizing more than the other. And the poor third world countries, they cannot subsidize agricultural farmers. or other types of business of that nature. So they are really in a position whereby they're growing the products, they're doing their hard work, and many times they are stuck in selling their products and goods and services.
And no, here what happened to that, here's what I believe happens. Once they realize they can't make no money that way, then you know we got a large influx of Colombians coming into Jamaica.
That is correct.
And they don't belong there for the purposes that they're coming there. And so the temptation to make money and that underground economy, people are going to survive. So they're going to do that. And then for a country like Jamaica to deal with something like cocaine, which comes through there, I can tell you myself from growing up in Harlem, in the city, and we know how governments can destroy people with even bringing in drugs and stuff. That's too small of a place for a drug like that to get into the infrastructure of the people. You know, like they say, one time it was just in the tourist area where the tourists, frequented. But when something like that, and I fear, and I hope that it doesn't happen to Jamaica, that something like that can get into the infrastructure of the people, it can destroy. Because you know what I'm saying, man.
What you're saying, Les, is totally correct. In the Jamaica, geographically, is located in a good and a bad place. In that you have to the south, the big drug countries and that have manufactured this drug. And they use Jamaica at times that in transit to the north that are buying the drugs. Because the drugs that you just said, cocaine and things like those, are not being used in Jamaica. It is a transshipment through Jamaica. And these wrong people, should call them, they are supplying a demand in the north while they're manufacturing in the south. And Jamaica has just been used as a transshipment port or ports for this venue. The government is strictly against it. But then again, you are dealing with the large sums of money and the government is trying their very, very best and do hope for America to help and keep on helping to stamp out this transshipment of cocaine from the south to the north.
Okay, we got corruption here, so I'm sure there's corruption there, and we know we have police here, corrupt police here, and I'm sure there's corrupt police there. And I understand that when the Crown was running the place, the police were paid a better salary, and that the fact that it's a mere pittance to what they were receiving, that sets them up to really be corrupt. You know, I talked to people in Westmoreland on Independence Day in 1984. I went to a cricket match, and they were telling me about the police coming in, wait till the farmer grows his crop, and then come and reap the crop. So, you know, and they said what they did to the police. I'm not going to tell you what they did, but you know what I'm saying. Stuff like that happens, man, and it's just a big problem. And if they do that with ganja, what about the cocaine thing? You know, I mean, it's just a big, big problem that I see. And, you know, I'm not a Jamaican man, but I've been involved in reggae music for the last 30 years. I love it.
Thank you.
You know, and I feel a part of it. So I just want to know why some of these things happen. I'm just on a learning sojourner, my brother.
Well, I tell you what, Raj, in a case like the police were being paid less than in the British regime, I would say no.
Oh, okay.
I would say no.
Okay.
Maybe percentage-wise, ratio-wise, and cost of living-wise, it could be indexed and said yes.
Okay.
But dollars and cents per se, then